97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the anniversary of a very special baseball game and a long-buried story about baseball and World War II. Our guest, Ann Keene, a writer based in Austin, Texas, and a UNC alum. And July 12, 1943, during World War II, 75 years ago, very special game, a baseball game in Fenway Park. What can you tell us about that game?
Well, it was an all-star game where Babe Ruth was pulled out to manage and coach a special lineup of military all-stars, and they played against the Boston Braves. Now, obviously it was 75 years ago today. One of the most iconic photographs shot at Fenway Park, it was a color image that really ran around the world on wire stories, sporting news, Boston papers, was of Ted shaking hands with Babe Ruth. And in the image, you'll see that Williams is wearing his Boston Red Sox traveling uniform, but he was actually in the Navy at the time. He was training as a cadet at a U.S. Navy pre-flight training base down in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, yay, Tar Heels. And Babe Ruth was actually wearing a costume from the movie Pride of the Yankees. So, you know, this is truly one of the most iconic photographs because of a number of factors. There's Ted. He's in perfect shape, tanned. He's beaming. He's been given leave of absence from his training in Chapel Hill, which was rare. I believe this was actually his first big out-of-town celebrity appearance. He played a number of games during the war, but this was the big one on July 12th. And he's shaking hands with Babe Ruth, who is declining. He's leaning on a bat, and he's in this, obviously, his pinstripe uniform. But behind them, they're taking this picture in the Red Sox dugout. And the other day, I was able to have a conversation with a gentleman who's 95 years old who was there. His name is George Yankowski, and he was a catcher with the Philadelphia Athletics. And obviously, he was with the Athletics. I believe he was 19 years old when Pearl Harbor was bombed, and he went into the Army, and he was training on a base outside of Boston at the time, and he played on this all-star team with Dom DiMaggio and a number of the celebrity players who were in various branches of the armed forces. But again, you see a couple things here. That story, when I spoke with George, he said that when they came out to shake hands, it was a hot, hot, terribly humid day. All the papers said that, including the Globe. And Babe Ruth, he said, was swilling beer out of a white pitcher. None of the military players, obviously, were drinking, but he swaggered up to shake hands with Ted Williams. They're both smiling. You know, obviously, Ted was, he's thrilled to be back home at Fenway Park. But the research that I've done and the book that I've written called The Cloudbuster Nine and obviously showcases Ted Williams as one of the most famous Navy players. It said that he actually he wanted to stay on base and train. In other words, he was very convicted to become really as good of a pilot as he was a baseball player. So he wasn't always jumping at the chance to leave base, and they really had to urge him to go ahead and make that appearance. And of course, he was thrilled to be there back home with all of his fans in Boston. But again, he was somebody who was truly committed to his work as a cadet. And as we'll discuss later, when he got to Chapel Hill, he didn't want any perks or special treatment. He just put his head down and wanted to be treated just like everyone else in a dog tag, and that's exactly what he did. So again, this was a famous, famous, iconic color photograph. And again, it just says so much about his character, his commitment to country. And again, he played on this all-star team, and they actually beat the Braves 9-8. And George, again, who was the catcher on that team, gave me just a few stories behind the scenes that just, you know, makes this photograph to me even more special.
So that game was in Boston. There were a lot of games involving this team, the Cloudbuster Nine, yes, and Ted Williams in this area, Chapel Hill, Durham, you know, up and down the East Coast, and lots of major league and minor league players came mm-hmm. to train to be Navy pilots in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I've been here for 19 years, and I'd never heard this story before yesterday.
But you knew about the base, correct?
No.
Oh, I see. I just find that fascinating. One thing I'll tell you, I basically fell into this story. My grandfather was the commander of the pre-flight base. He had gone to Annapolis, graduated in 1926. My father was the, quote, bat boy mascot of the base in 1943. And he had gone to Carolina. He was an All-American pitcher there. He pitched for the Durham Bulls. Had a good run for about 5 years in the minor leagues, got that tryout, that, quote, cup of coffee with the major leagues, with the Detroit Tigers, but by then his arm was pretty much destroyed from overuse. He didn't make it, and he left baseball, but when he passed away a few years ago, he had two daughters, and I was the oldest daughter who was asked to write his obituary and deliver a eulogy, and I wanted to really honor him with the one thing in his life that truly made him happy, and that was baseball. And again, he left the sport in 1961, and I went down in the basement, and he had a traveling trunk that was literally under rusty lawn tools. And it was a stainless steel container, and I opened it up, and I knew a bit about his days as the bat boy for the Cloudbusters in Chapel Hill. I knew that Ted and Johnny were there, Johnny Pesky. They were also his babysitters, along with Orville Campbell, if you can believe that, because Orville and the major league players spent a lot of time with their families. So obviously, you know, I wanted to honor my dad to read all his stories, but what I found was so much bigger. I just couldn't believe it. I opened up the trunk. There was a Navy scrapbook, and I'm not an expert on baseball. I know much more than I did a few years ago, but it was obvious that there were many major league players, Charlie Gehringer, John Sain, Buddy Grimp, Buddy Hassett, Harry Kraft is another, and I instantly recognized these players. And after I finished the book, we actually counted 23 major league players who either trained as cadets or they were coaches. So that was twofold. Now, the cadets formed a team that really came together with major league players in May of 1943. And what they did, as you mentioned earlier, was they did canvass the state of North Carolina. They played the Durham Bulls. They played college teams in a special league called the Ration League, obviously named after gas and rationing, where they played Duke and NC State, colleges very close by. But then they expanded their range, and they played Norfolk Naval Training Station. They had two teams there: Burlington Weavers, the Carolina Victory League, the Red Springs Robins, Burlington Mills, Wake Forest Army Finance. So what you see is a grouping of military teams, then you've got your industrial textile teams, your college teams, the strong military teams that came down from you know, Norfolk, the naval teams. They were truly the best military teams in the country. And then on top of this, Ted was allowed to leave, as well as Johnny Pesky, for a few exhibition games, one of which was at Fenway, that famous All-Star game up in Boston. But there was another huge game, which I'd like to talk about later, and that is famous. It was called the Yanklands, and it was when the Navy pilots went to New York, and they faced a team of Yankees and Indians that were actually once again managed by Babe Ruth. So that was later in the month on July 28, 1943.
All right, let's come back to that when Sports Focus returns.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with writer Ann Keene, who has penned the book, The Cloudbuster Nine, and the subtitle of the book I'd really like for you to address, The Untold Story of Ted Williams and the Team That Helped Win World War II. How did this team help win World War II?
Well, they were patriots. And what I find fascinating is during this war, I believe 90% of professional players, being major, minor, semi-pro players, they put down their gloves and they served their country, and they did it gladly. I've interviewed a number of survivors, and as of today, I believe we have roughly 41 surviving World War II Major League veterans, and I've asked them all, how did that make you feel? And they said, I didn't feel. I just did it. I was so proud to serve my country. There was no question there about taking a leave of absence. Now, Ted Williams rose. Initially, the book did not have his name in the title, and I was very fortunate to work with one of the baseball encyclopedia editors to assemble the games and check all the scores. And as I was interviewing former cadets, there is a surviving player who's 98 years old named Ivan Flesser, who put me back on the field, but also interviewing family members such as Claudia Williams. What we instantly realized was everyone I spoke with had a Ted Williams story. They had missed some of the, even if they were at the other games, they would say, yeah, I was there, but boy, let me tell you about that home run that he hit. And that just kept happening over and over. And so, therefore, my editor said, we really need to put the spotlight on Ted Williams, because this is truly an untold story about this phase of military training, where he was cocooned on base in Chapel Hill. And again, when part of the university was converted to a Navy training station, they had guard stations, sentry posts, so people couldn't just walk in and out. But Ted lived at Everett Dorm on the third floor, and when he was there, he was really protected. The media couldn't get to him, so he was training very hard. It truly was the most difficult physical training program on Earth. It was designed as such. And again, because the media couldn't get to him, some of the stories, they were controlled, and people didn't really see what he was doing day to day. So when he went out on the road and went on the games, everyone remembered it. But again, this was a private, cloistered time in his life. So really, for 3 months, he was behind walls, if you will. I mean, there weren't physical walls on the campus, but what he did, it was private, it was classified. And so, again, the rest of the world couldn't really see what was going on day to day. So, therefore, you don't see any books on this, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Let me ask you to jump back really quick. I'm fascinated by the discovery of the trunk in Hickory, North Carolina.
Right.
I guess that's where you grew up. Right. It's not like you open a trunk and there's $1 million in there, but what is in there is essentially priceless. What you had found?
Right. No, I had no idea. It was down there literally since Kennedy was assassinated, and it had been tied with a twine rope. Now, my father had a few trophies upstairs and some autographed balls by Ted Williams and Johnny Pesky, which we actually played with as kids. We let him roll in the creek. The dogs tore up his mitts. He mowed the lawn in his cleats. And so we saw that. But when I opened the trunk, I was really moved, too, by some of the Daily Tar Heel stories about his career in college at Chapel Hill, because he actually played football, basketball, and really settled on baseball. And you don't really see that very often. But I got a glimpse at my father, at his life and his youth, and there were just things that I never knew about him, and trading cards, contracts from agents. He had saved it all. But I thought that was strange that it was down in the basement and it wasn't displayed upstairs in his showcase with the trophies from college and from the minors.
Sports Focus will return right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Ann Keene about her book, The Cloudbuster 9. And you mentioned the one game in Boston. There was another game involving Babe Ruth and this group of Navy trainer pilots who played baseball, and who were many of them who had been Major League Baseball players. Tell us about that second game.
Well, it was really called the Yanklands game. And it was a war bond game because the year before they were raking in the war relief dollars. And by this point, mid-war or early in the spring of, in summer of 1943, there was a lull in the fundraising. And so the Yankees management got together with the Navy and they decided to host a midweek game. Wasn't a weekend, but it was a midweek game where Babe Ruth was called back to manage a lineup of the Indians and the Yankees. Now, I don't know if this name rings a bell, but Snuffy Sternweiss, he had been a legendary player at Chapel Hill, and he was actually on the Yanklands team. And but from the Yanklands pilots, we had at least a dozen major league players who got on an overnight bus. Now this is important. They didn't have luxury trains with Pullmans. They traveled in ragtag tin can buses with the windows open, at victory speed, which was really slow. So it was an overnight trip from Chapel Hill to New York, and they got there the next morning. But they played this Yanklands team managed by Babe Ruth. There were wire stories literally around the world. I mean, there were AP stories, UPI, from coast to coast. And again, it actually did not raise the amount of money that they had expected, but there was something else there. There was a spirit, a really patriotic spirit, where the reporters actually paid for tickets to get into the game. It drew, I believe, about 30,000 fans. Again, didn't raise a tremendous amount of money, but there were factory workers there. There were kids, players, management. You know, it was this gathering of people on a really patriotic level where, you know, everyone did their part. They were glad to be there. And, of course, you've got your Navy pilots who had played in the major leagues. And Buddy Hassett had actually played first base for the New York Yankees, taking Luke Garrick's position after he passed away. And, of course, he was with the Navy. He was a coach for the pre-flight school, but he was there. So everybody came back wearing different uniforms, different jerseys, the Navy jerseys, of course, for the Cloudbusters. And then they play this, you know, Yankees-Indians lineup. And I don't really want to give it away to tell you about the final score, but it was quite a game. Again, it raised a respectable amount of money. But more than anything, it was the spirit that game ushered that really was what the true beauty, I believe, of what that game was all about.
So we have just a couple of minutes left, and tell me about some of the games in Chapel Hill.
Well, there was a May 11th game in 1943, and there's a living player, a guy named Ivan Plester, who's 98. He's a pitcher. And what he told me was that game, he attracted about 4,000 people. And it was people who, the waves and the officers and the coaches and the people who worked in the kitchen on the base. And again, there were thousands of people who operated this Navy pre-flight training base during the war.
And also people from Lenoir Dining Hall.
Lenoir Dining Hall. Now, I heard that some of the POWs who had actually worked as waiters and servers may have been there. I know they went to the 1940s. But also you had townspeople, the bankers and the people who ran the gas stations and the grocers. If they could get a pass to go onto the base and enter the ballpark, they were there. And if you look at pictures at Wilson Library, they have thousands of incredible Life magazine quality pictures. You can see them. People are sitting, they are sitting literally kids in parents' laps. They're sitting on the sidelines. The stadium bleachers at the old Emerson Field, they're absolutely packed. And again, thousands of people came for that May 11th game. And it was rained out, but they came back. And they played literally dozens of games that season, home games especially, at Emerson Field. And again, my friend who's the 98-year-old pitcher said, before the major leaguers really shift in May, that the bleachers were pretty empty, you know, but then suddenly you get Ted Williams and Johnny Pesky and, you know, literally dozens of major league players there. It was truly like a homecoming of the major leagues. That's actually was one of the titles of the articles that ran across the state of North Carolina.
And the book is The Untold Story of Ted Williams and the Team That the subtitle is The Untold Story of Ted Williams and the Team That Helped Win World War II, The Cloudbuster Nine. That's author Ann Keen, UNC alum. We want to thank you, Ann, for coming on. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to our listeners for being with us. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.